Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here this evening. Tonight, we are going to take a slow talk, what we call, just to be able to rest in and reflect back into the past, into those decades before, into those times when life just seemed to be easier. It just seemed to be, oh gosh, if we could go back and we would say, I remember things were so much easier decades ago. I remember we could just get things done and it was so much easier. I remember everything we ever wanted was out there and we were able to attain it. When we really think about it, we're thinking about the generations, 30s, 40s, 50s. Was everything really easy? Was it harder? Was it really, people just said, hey, you know, we got through the war, we can get through anything. They took up their shovels, they took up their nails, and they started to build things, companies, businesses, homes, neighborhoods. I remember we lived in northern part of Pennsylvania in the 50s, and I'll tell you, it was hard. You know, you took whatever job you could find. You did whatever you could to take care of your family. Everyone was then striving to have, you know, kids in school. Many had a lot of times they said, did we ever finish school? The parents and the generations before. So things were starting to come up about being able to have school, to be able to have a job, to be able to have a great legacy. And everyone was looking to be able to create that. Today, my guest is Roe Patterson. Going to share a story of his father, the amazing life story of Glenn Patterson, an American oil man, in his book, Crude Blessings. And really what Roe will be sharing about us today is about his father's just get up and do it, get it done, do what you can do, faith, trust, and it's really about saying, you know what, we can do this, and everybody helping together and being able to band together really to have a great life. Roe, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
That's my pleasure to be with you.
Oh, thank you, Roe. So, you know, I think when we look at your book, Roe, we say it's a story of really, don't you think, right after the war, man, everybody had it, you know, it's one leg up, one leg keep going, you know, you're up before the sun, you don't go to bed till the sun's gone down, and people really knew about hard work, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely, especially physical hard work. You know, there are more desk jobs today than there were back then. You know, back then, you know, corporate lifestyle just was a very rare one. Most everyone was blue collar. And, you know, my family was no exception. My grandfather and my father, you know, both came through a generation where, you know, they were working sun up to sun down, almost always a blue collar physical labor type of role, whether it be farming or in my father's case, it was the oil and gas industry, but lots of physical labor and no one shied away from it because it was right. Just what you did.
Absolutely. You know, I even said to someone the other day, I had asked someone if they could do something for me and it was like, it's 3 months now, I've been asking for the same thing. And I finally said to the person, I said, did you ever have an opportunity to understand that when you were asked for something, you just got up and did it? You know, it was just like, let's have that get them done kind of attitude and really be able to share, you know, to be able to say, hey, I did it, you know, because I was asked to, or I felt that need to help others, or I felt that it was great to be able to do something. And they're like, no. And I went, oh, to gosh, you know. So I think that now in the, you know, the year 2018, we look back and we say, you know, we really have that, I'm in my 60s and I'm sure you have it, that core thing that says, you and I probably get up and go. We get up and do. You're asked something, it's like, yeah, okay, I can do it 5 minutes, 10 seconds. Can I do it next week? You know, whatever. But we always have it that we're willing to get up and go and do things for the betterment of the good of everyone. I think that's very important. Don't you think so?
Well, I agree. I think that probably one difference between then and now is, you know, if you didn't do it back then, you didn't eat, you know.
Right.
So today, you know, there's a lot of handouts and various ways to get by without having to really do anything. And so there's a little bit of where society's sort of living off itself and it's not really producing a lot. And definitely back then, people took a lot of pride in hard work. They measured themselves by hard work. You know, to say someone was a hard worker, you were paying that person the ultimate compliment. You know, today you might say someone's very wealthy or very successful or a very accomplished, you know. Back then you didn't say that. You said, that's a hard worker. And everyone knew what you meant. Oh, that person was a doer. You know, they didn't sit around. They weren't lazy. They were getting after it every day, getting up and really, you know, being a net contributor to society and to their family and to their community or whatever. And, you know, my grandfather and my dad both were like that. I'm that to some degree. You know, I love for someone to say, oh, he's a hard worker, because I still remember how much of a real brag that was.
Well, you know, I think now I see it almost as corporations are built tier down. In other words, someone will have an idea and they'll build it, you know, below them. But really, you know, with your father, Glenn, and with yourself, it's really about building that tier upward. You know, it's really, we have an idea and we're going to put the two pieces of nails together to make it for the next day. You know, what do we have to do this week to meet payroll at the end of the week? What do we have to do to be able to make sure if there's a storm coming, you know, I mean, the oil industry, you know this, when there's a storm coming, how can we take care of everyone in the company? How can we take care of our company? How can we take care of everyone's families? So it's really about building it from the bottom up, looking at it that way. Versus now, I think everybody just really looks at it, you know, they're at the top and they just let it dribble down to be able to create itself, don't you think?
I do think so, especially in larger corporations. I think, though, with entrepreneurs, even today, it's really bottom-up because it just that's just the style of business development that comes from entrepreneurism. It demands that, you know, that it's kind of all for one and one for all, and you start small and you grow into it and you appreciate it and bring people up along the way. And I think you've seen startups these days, they still have that in common, you know, that, you know, it's a small idea and it just becomes bigger and bigger and bigger. And that's the way it was for Dad's business. Started with one rig and ended with, you know, 300 plus. So, you know, started as a one rig drilling contractor in Texas and ended up being a, you know, a national billion-dollar drilling contractor. So, you know, it's a real rags-to-riches story, and I still think those stories are out there today. They may be a little less because people, there's private equity, there's capital markets, and people start with sort of, they start on second base, you know, they start on third base. Whereas, you know, definitely back in those days when you were starting a company, you were coming around first base all by yourself.
Right, right. Well, you know what, too, in your book, your father had said, you know, operating on faith and living on a shoestring. I'll tell you, I live in New Orleans, and that's very much a common kind of phrase that we use a lot down here, because everybody really is not looking for that big legacy in the sky. They're just looking to be able to bring it forth and to be able to create things. And don't you think, you know, all through your life and your father's, is that that's really what he's wanted to do, is about being able to put everything together and really, you know, owning up to it. In other words, the company was his and everything would reflect, per se, yes?
I do agree. You know, Dad wore the company on his sleeve, so,
right.
You know, he wanted his truck to be clean every day because he wanted all of his employees to see that Dad took pride in keeping a clean truck, you know, and
right.
he wanted all the equipment to be clean, you know, he wanted the shop floor to be clean, and, you know, the way he did this was by leading by example. You know, if the shop floor was dirty and Dad came in and found it, you know, he didn't gripe at anybody yet. He may later, but first thing he did was grab a broom and start sweeping. And, mm-hmm. you know, when you see the boss sweeping, you're going to get to sweeping too. You know, you're like, ooh, right. we're in trouble, and you get to cleaning. And that, so Dad tried to lead by example. You know, if he showed up on a drilling rig and it was dirty, he started finding buckets and some wash soap, and he was going to start washing. He was going to show those employees that if you really want to take pride in your job and take pride in the company you work for, then show it. And so that was his philosophy.
And it's also about getting up there and getting out. I think a lot of times we say we don't want to be lazy about our work. We don't want to say I have enough or whatever. It's really about being able to do the best, I think, to be very, to really trust and to really want to do the best. In other words, like if something was broken, it would be, how can we fix it? Or if something was maybe there was a little glitch or something, we would always be looking to make it better. In other words, substandard was never in our vocabulary, don't you think?
Oh, I do. And, Dad, with the book and in the book I write about it, his mantra was, you know, just do the right thing. Get it done. Do the right thing. And that's really how he approached business. It's how he approached all friendships, life. Even his relationships with vendors and competitors, you know, he did what he thought was best, what was right, you know, and he would say, you know, if everybody loses and you win, something was wrong. Everyone needs to win together. If everybody loses or you're losing and they win, something's wrong. We should prosper together, and we should sort of get through the tough times together too. And so his sense of fair play, ethics, and honesty was just right at the forefront of everything he put into both his personal life and to the company. Now, I'm not going to tell you he was a perfect guy. He had flaws, and as we all do, and I write about several of them in the book. But generally, you know, do the right thing was just something he sort of expected from everyone else, and he expected that of himself.
It's almost, I think, because when you grow up and you're able to take care of things and start getting things going, you start to see something positive in your life. You start to see that you have power, that you are able to create, that you are able to produce. I mean, you know, you look at the oil industry. I mean, living in the South, it's like, wow, that's a pretty pretty fluid industry, you know. I mean, we've heard the good, bad, and the ugly, you know, in the past few decades, you know, with all of the leaks in the Gulf and everything else, you know, and the spills and all this other stuff. And we say, you know, are people being really reputable? Are people being really honest and truthful with their work? And really, your father has been a perfect example of that, yes?
Oh, yeah. I mean, people don't realize, but the oil and gas industry is probably one of the better and bigger stewards of the environment than anyone. I mean, if we weren't, there'd be a lot more problems and contaminations. And things like what happened in the Gulf are very rare. And when they do happen, it's awful. And the industry has to come together to create better standards, better engineering, better safety, better protocol to clean up and to make sure that it's prevented and it never happens again. And we always try to do that. But, you know, when you look at the industries that have committed, you know, environmental contamination or waste or done anything that was really overtly dangerous for its employees, et cetera, our industry, while not, without some blame and some fault, definitely is one of those that tries very hard to be a good steward of the environment, to do things the right way. We know the spotlight's on us. You know, we know at any given time everyone's watching what we're doing, and we have a little bit of a target on our back in some respects. So everyone's sensitive to what we do. And so I think we recognize that, and we work even harder to make sure that no one can point the finger because we're doing things the right way.
But that's really what makes honorable and stand-up people in the long run, because really the oil industry, I mean, you're responsible pretty much for the money flow of the country. You're also responsible for the people that work for you. You know that in a minute you may lose millions and millions of dollars, or you may lose millions of workers. You may have a catastrophe that may just affect so many people, you know, or a lifestyle, or it may affect their lives. In other words, you've really got lives that you are responsible for. It's not just about you, what you do, go in and do each day, and you sell a product, and you go home, and you just have whatever. It's really you are involved in everyone's lives, of the flow of the country and of the people. And I think your father, I'm sure, in some way felt that sense of responsibility, you know, almost to take up the staff kind of idea. We have a responsibility here, and this is how we're making the world go round, don't you think?
He did, and I do. It's, it, you know, being an executive in this industry, you do worry about your employees. You worry about you know, both their monetary condition, financial conditions. You worry about their physical and health conditions. You know, you worry about safety in the workplace. And it is a lot different than say someone who's, you know, at Google or Amazon, and all they have to do is, you know, hit a button and hit the right button and make margin on flipping assets or something like that. You know that we drive the company, we power the country. We people like mm-hmm. to turn on when they turn on a light switch, they want it to come on, and that's what we do. We make sure there's power there so that they can turn it on. When they turn on the computer, there's a way to turn it on. And when they charge their phone, it gets charged. When they charge their electric car, it gets charged. Well, all of that comes from hydrocarbons, and people forget that, but we don't as an industry. We know what we do. We know how important it is. It is a sense of pride, also a sense of responsibility, and along with that goes the care and the management of all of our employees as well. So when you think about it, if you think about it too long, it'll take your breath away. You have to think about it and think, well, all I can do is the best I can do, and I'm going to do the best I can do for my employees and make sure that they're as safe as they possibly can be, and that we are going to, you know, continue to provide for this country, but in terms of energy creation, and you know, we do that, and we do that we do it every day, and almost without, you know, a lot of recognition from the rest of the country. I don't think our industry is thought of much, which is also kind of fine. You know, the spotlight's never a good thing.
Today we discuss many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.
Too, that really leads to a sense of trust in the world around you, a sense of, you know, if I hold up and do the good work, the world will work and everything will be spinning and everybody will be fine. And, you know, in other words, like I'm bringing good to the world. And then you look at what happened to your father when he had his diagnosis, and it was like, oh my gosh, so now is the world not exactly what I thought it was going to be? Is the world... Can I trust, have faith in the future? What about when now it's flipped? All that I thought is now gone away. Yes?
Yeah, a little bit. I think for him it was a sense of disappointment. You know, here I am at the pinnacle of my career. I'm ready to retire. I've built this company from nothing into something and been through enormous pitfalls along the way. Fell down, picked myself up, got knocked down again, picked myself up multiple times, and you know, and now I'm here, and to find out, oh, I'm here, but I also have Alzheimer's, and mm-hmm. You know I'm going to have a short existence, and it's not going to be a great one. There was just a huge disappointment, a huge letdown, but in typical form, he really sort of, you know, kind of just took it in stride a little bit for a while, and then after a little while, I think as typical with a lot of Alzheimer's patients, he went into full denial, and he just said, "I'm not sick, and
right.
I'm fine." And you know, and everyone, you know, all of us around him, we knew there were changes. We knew he was, you know, he was sick, but he was bound and determined to not be sick and to be fine and to put on the appearance that there was nothing wrong with his memory or his you know, physical function, etc., until it became so overwhelming that he couldn't hide it or bury it or ignore it, you know. But I think for every Alzheimer's patient, there's periods of you know, just wanting to ignore any kind of symptom and pretend like it's not happening.
Well, I think also too, to be able to, once you get the diagnosis, it's really about, okay, in my thoughts, if I have a year or 2 years before I've really got trouble, I'm going to try to deny it so that I can relish every minute, so that I can hurry up and get out and do things that I normally do, or hurry up and be able to do something that I might have missed. Or, you know, in other words, they try to squeeze decades of end of life into weeks or years pretty quickly. Don't you think they do that?
Yeah, they do. I think they definitely start to think about their mortality more than any healthy person. And you know, I think they do want to see things speed up. And unfortunately, as much as they want to see things speed up, the physicality of their sickness is that things actually slow down. And so you know, they become less mobile, less able to go and do, you know, requiring more assistance to go and do, and you know, that's a confidence rattler. I mean, for someone who was very independent, to be more dependent upon caregivers, that's a tough reality to settle into. But they do try to squeeze, you know, as much as they can while they can. And, you know, unfortunately for Dad, that period didn't last very long. You know, he progressed pretty quick to a point where he really wasn't able to go and do. And then, of course, he lived a long time. I think those diseases are kind of cruel that, you know,
right.
In another way, you know, life is prolonged because by and large, they're very healthy. It's just their brain is not, and the body, but the rest of the body is relatively healthy. So that's probably one of the tougher parts of the disease.
You know, my husband took care of both of his parents. First, one parent with Alzheimer's took care of him by himself in the home for 5 years, and then subsequently the next parent for another 5 years. So it's been 10 years. Taking care of two parents by himself, and this was decades ago when there was really no help and it really wasn't talked about. This is in the early 90s. And you look back at it and you say, how can we, even like, let's look at your father's instance. You have a powerful man. You have a strong person. You have a go-getter, a doer, and you know, I mean, I know this from, you know, decades with many relatives, is the sun comes up, you're already outside, you're already in your car doing something, or, you know, getting up, moving around, walking, doing stuff. And then you look back and you say, well, what's going to happen now when those things start to change? I think sometimes we find that people say, I might be losing my memory, but I'm losing more of my memory. I'm losing my power. I'm losing my existence. I'm losing myself. I am losing all that I was. And then you have to ask, are you losing your identity of what you thought you were? Or are you just losing some of the things that you used to do? I think that really hits a lot of people at home, and they have a very hard time coming to grasp with that, yes?
Yeah, Dad was, you know, a big driver. He loved to drive. He flew around the country too to visit the different locations that Patterson operated. But he also drove a lot. He put a lot of miles behind his car. His truck was always clean, and when it got dirty, he was headed to wash it. And he took a lot of pride in that truck. and it was important to him. Drive time was very important. He did a lot of thinking behind the wheel, a lot of phone calls, a lot of strategizing while he was alone driving down the road. And, it was just a real part of his life. And when we had to take that car away, we had to take that truck away, and he could no longer perform that function of driving. I mean, it was like you took away an existence for him. You took away a real part of his life. And so I think as patients that go through Alzheimer's, and I talk about this in the book a little bit, you know, as they lose some of those things that were precious to them, you know, it's just an unbelievable defeat. It's a defeat. They feel defeated. And, you know, so, and that's sad, to watch, and sad to see, people go through. You know, people always say, you know, well, Alzheimer's has got to be one of the worst diseases. Well, I think it's different, right? You know, ALS, and cancer are tough on the patient because the patient's mind is relatively good shape and their body is what's failing. But their mind is there, and Alzheimer's is really hard on the family because at some point the patient becomes really oblivious, and their body is fine, but their mind is gone, and it's hard on the family to watch them lose all of that. So,
yeah, I think when you lose your mobility, you almost lose your sense of who you are and really what you've been upholding for all these decades. You know, I think also, too, you talk about faith in God in the book, and I think that sometimes people say, I had faith in myself that I would do it before, and then God would be second, or I knew I could do it, and everything would be okay. When really, sometimes I think when I work with a lot with end-of-life clients, and we all talk about this, we say, why do we have to wait till the last moment to be able to know that, you know, have that deep-rooted connection with your God, whatever that might be, and really to be able to feel it and know everything's going to be okay? I think, you know, with your father, you know, to be able to know that and have that sense of it prior to really, you know, being maybe not even recognizing it. But to be able to have that sense of calm and peace, I think, is really what so many people look for, yes?
Well, I agree. I think that, you know, dad was a Christian. He found his Christian faith late in life and during kind of the first part of the onset of his disease. And the disease took two things from Dad. One was that sense of busyness, you know, that I don't have time for God and I don't have time
right.
for faith. It took that away and stripped him of that. Dad had a lot of pride. You know, hey, I'm prideful. I know there's a God, or I believe there's a God, but he needs to go take care of people who need him. I'll take care of me, you know, that sort of, I'll take care of me. I'm strong enough to take care of me, and God needs to take care of those poor sick people, you know, that kind of thing. And so there was that for Dad, and that got stripped away too. And so then there's that fear also, the fear of mortality, and then that fear of what's going to happen to me. And it makes you look and you look inward and you look for that, you know, what am I? Why am I here? And, you know, why are we all here? And, you know, I think if you look hard enough and you ask those questions hard enough, at least in our faith, it comes to you pretty rapidly that, you know, you're here to give and to serve, and that it's not about you. It's about, you know, a creator, and that's where Dad found himself. And it was humbling. And it was, but it was also really rewarding because there was an unbelievable calm that he found in his faith.
And also that brings us right back to the beginning of the conversation when I said that really the industry that he brought up was really about supporting people. So he really was in service all the time. He may have just maybe had a few extra words in there, or needed to put a comma instead of a period at the end of the sentence, or whatever it was. But he really was in service, and he really was, you know, doing his best. And I think that's very important. Yes.
Yeah, Dad was a give the shirt off his back kind of person. He gave and gave. There's no telling how much money over the years Dad gave away. He gave it without expecting it back. These weren't loans. I mean, he may have called them loans, but he knew some of the people he was giving money to could never pay him back. Some of the people he was giving head starts to would never be able to pay him back, or never would. And he never expected it. He never asked for it. He was just a real giver, a real server of people, of man. And those are very strong Christian tenets. And he didn't think about that. He didn't realize what he was doing had a Christian tenet to it. He didn't realize that, the honesty and integrity that he tried to live by, even though he wasn't perfect, he didn't realize that those are things that you need to try to do as a person of faith. And those are things that people of faith strive for. That wasn't something he really tied together, but it was there all along. Really in the background, he was doing a lot of things that a person of faith would have said, wow, that's a real strong witness, for that faith. And he didn't even know he was doing it. It was just natural to him. And it's natural in our industry. Our industry is made up of a lot of people like that, just good, strong, minded people who very, very shirt off their back kind of folks, that would do anything for someone in need. I think the philanthropy coming out of this industry is amazing, but it's because we're so tied to, I think, the ground. It's a very cyclical industry. So just about the time that you think you're on top, you're back on bottom again, and it'll humble you.
Absolutely, we've seen that over the decades, haven't we?
For sure, yeah, for sure.
But you know what, too, Ro? I think that at the end of the book, I think really this is the best thing we could say about life. It's really when you had a conversation and you shared with your father and you said, Dad, they named me CEO of BASIC. I guess I'm going to be the boss after all. And he said, good boy. Don't you really think that's what we're looking for is confirmation? That
I do. Yeah, sure. I mean, everybody wants someone to be proud of them, and everybody wants some confirmation that what they've been working hard for their whole life has been worth it. And, Dad was always... took great pride in my accomplishments and my brother's accomplishments. He was always, in our corner, big cheerleader for us. So anytime we did something good, he would just, be there to say, way to go. And next thing he would say was, you've got more to do. Don't wear your hand out patting yourself on the back. Now you can go do even more, get busy, but good job. Right. And he didn't mind handing out an attaboy. What made it so special there at the end of Dad's life was that he had, he'd been waiting to see if I was going to get that role of CEO. And by the time I got it, he'd really lost his ability to speak. He hadn't spoke to me in weeks, well, months, at the time that I went to visit and to tell him, that I'd achieved that position and achieved that promotion. And it was really an odd conversation, a real very special one, because he's sitting there staring out the window as he had become accustomed to doing at that time and really not communicating with me. He'd look at me and he'd glance and he might raise his eyebrows over something, but really no voice. He might laugh a little bit if I told a joke or something, or teased him, or made fun of myself or something. He would laugh, but just sort of half following the conversation. I didn't really feel like he was engaging, and wasn't even sure he knew who I was, even at that time. And so when I told him that, and he said, he looked me right in the eye, and his head whipped around, and he looked right at me, and he just said, good boy. And those are the only two things he said. He said, good boy. And then he turned and kind of went back into that fog. But for that moment, right then, right there, I knew that he knew, and I knew he was proud.
Yeah. You know, I think those moments God always shares those miracles at the end of our lives, so that they're very important to put a closure and say, you know what, I see you, I hear you, and I love you, no matter what the words might be. A lot of those lucid moments are really just, they're almost like golden moments. Do you know what I mean? It's like a golden ticket to seal your heart, we would always call them. And we
That's
always
right.
felt, you know, it just, okay, we're good. And then, you know, everything is, all this was worth it, yes?
Yeah, you know, and Dad lived he lived another 2 years after that, but we never spoke again, and you know, or you know, he never clearly spoke to me again. But it was a great moment for me, and one I wanted to share in the book.
Right. Well, Ro, it's been such a pleasure to speak with you today. I think, you know, when you share the story of your father, Glenn Patterson, it's really about saying that, you know, we run so hard in life, and it's really about noticing all of our life. Now that we're in the year 2018, it's like, how can we be everything in our lives? And it's just, the answer is, do the best you can, make sure you bring in faith and love every day, and notice the people around you, and do a great job. And I think the combination of your story and your father's is really what you're sharing and highlighting, yes?
I think so. I wanted people to know that you know, good guys still win, and
yeah.
And it's still okay to be a good guy, you know, both in life and in business. And if you do that, you leave a legacy.
Absolutely. And really what you leave is you just leave people just feeling good and really knowing that, you know, life really is worth it. You know, we see a lot of people now challenging the story, is life worth it, you know, or I don't have to worry about it. Nobody's looking, or I don't really care. Why bother? And really what your father reflects is it is important. It is important to be truthful to yourself, because really when it comes down to it, it's yourself that's in the long run.
That's right. Yep, that's right. People will remember you, and not only for what you did and what you said, but you know, what you
yeah.
stood for. And
absolutely.
You know, I think that's important for all people to build into their lives, is, you know, what am I going to stand for? And when I'm gone, what legacy did I leave? Did I leave a legacy of giving and helpfulness and selflessness, or did I leave a legacy of, boy, that guy really or took care of himself or herself, you know,
right.
And it was them first and everybody else second.
Absolutely. Well, Ro, it was such a pleasure to have you with us. Could you share with the listeners how to find out more information about you? That would be wonderful.
Well, you can Google me always. There's some information in the book about me, quite a bit, and both in the you know, on the cover, and then in the book, the book is on Amazon and it's on iBooks, so it's pretty easy to find. But you know, I'm CEO of a public oil and gas company. Kind of took what Dad had started, and I don't work for the same company. I went out on my own and really made my own path, and he was very proud of that. And it's been a great road, and I don't regret being in this industry or being part of this family at all. It's special. So I think I just wanted to share that, you know, what it was like to grow up in all of this, and to see a company go really, and a man go from nothing to really a whole lot of something.
Absolutely. And it's to be able to honor that. I mean, so many people don't honor, you know, their relatives or those people in their family lives, or even the people that they know, they don't even honor themselves. I think honor is really the name of the game. And you shared a really good book about honor.
Well, thank you.
Oh, you're so welcome. Ro, thank you so much for joining us today. It was such a pleasure to have you with us.
Well, it was my pleasure as well.
Thank you. If you'd like to find out more information about T.M. Ro Patterson, and the book is Crude Blessings, The Amazing Story of Glenn Patterson, an American Oilman, please do click on the link on the bottom of today's show page and go directly to his website. And really do check it out, because it really is about a lot of our elders now are really transitioning, and they're saying, you know, what really is my life about? Or people in our 50s and 60s were saying our elders are having all these health conditions and I don't know what they're really talking about, or they're having Alzheimer's issues. And maybe you can just sit down and read Rose's book. It's really about a story. And you could say, you know what, maybe there's pieces in here that might fit for me. And it's like you could feel a sense of peace. You could feel a sense of just everything is going to be okay, and just be able to share it with your elders. A lot of times they'll say, yeah, we used to work really hard. And it's really kind of a door opener, because then they're able to share their story. So please do check out the book again, Crude Blessings. It's on the bottom of today's show page. And thank you so much for joining us today. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. Till tomorrow, have a great day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.